Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago covering the massive Seattle protests which shut down the World Trade Organization's summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
The world is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Drives my senses into the sunlight, for there are things that I must do. Wish me luck now, I have to leave you. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. With my friends now, up to the city, we're gonna shake the gates of hell. And I will tell them, we will tell them. Ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. That our sunlight is not for franchise, and wish the bastards drop down dead. Next time you see me, I may be smiling. Bella, ciao, bella, ciao, bella, ciao, ciao, ciao. I'll be in prison or on the TV.
Hello and welcome to the show. You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. It's Wednesday the 7th of July. Coming up, we've got our usual mix of highlights from the Indie Media newswires. And we'll be starting with an in-depth look at the GM issue and a set of actions that were occurring this week when Sainsbury's chilled food distribution centres were blockaded right across the country. That was on Thursday. It was in protest against GM feed being fed to dairy cows. Now, Sainsbury's five biggest UK distribution centres were shut down as environmentalists and consumers simultaneously blockade the supermarket's chained chilled goods depots in London, Liverpool, Birmingham, Bristol and Sheffield. Campaigners chained themselves together through sealed tubes or sat up scaffold tripods blocking the depot gates. The coordinated action was intended to halt distribution of Sainsbury's dairy products that come from cows fed GM animal feed. The protest followed Sainsbury's failure to provide non-GM fed milk as standard, despite rivals like Marks and Spencer's and the Co-op doing so. The action was also taken in solidarity with farmers, demanding they get a fair price of 2p on the pound for non-GM milk. Indeed, the coalition of groups campaigning on this issue includes Farmers for Action, the Small and Family Farmers Alliance, the Small Farms Association and the Whole Food Association, as well as the Institute of Science in Society, Genetic Food Alert and the Genetic Engineering Network. One protester explained, "Neither farmers or consumers want GM in their food chain. Sainsbury's must keep their promise to phase out its use and pay farmers properly so they can do so." A farmer added, "We are paid less for our milk than it costs to produce. GM is only adding to the crisis in our industry. We want an end to the exploitation of foreign farmers through GM and an end to the exploitation of us by the supermarkets." One protester wrote about the coordinated blockade actions, saying, "It is a whirlwind that is transforming how we grow, manufacture and consume our food. This changes the relationship between agriculture, technology and ecology. It is part of the latest stage of an epochal global shift away from peasant production to global commodity production and an industrialized and privatized ecology. In the last decades, those who have been separated from the land and corralled into vast conurbations and shanty towns now form the majority of the world's people. The development of GM crops by the world's giant chemical corporations is a key part of this process. In the fantasies of venture capitalists, investors and company executives, nature could be reduced to a simple code and therefore could now be reprogrammed to suit corporate needs. The corporations are pushing this technology, while vast areas of scientific uncertainty still remain about its environmental and also health effects. For they have also begun to privatise science, enclosing its commons as their intellectual property. They are appropriating it as the new engine of their knowledge economy. Thus, they are limiting its field of vision by driving out any critical and independent scientific voices."
Lord Sainsbury is a key figure in this process in the UK. He is Tony Blair's multi-billionaire Minister for Science and Innovation. He is the man in charge of promoting biotechnology at the UK's Department of Trade and Industry. He has responsibility for science funding and research policy and is also a key player on the government's powerful Sci-Bio-GM Cabinet Committee. He is also a key investor in GM research and the largest single donor to the Labour Party, giving it £9 million in 5 years alone between 1996 and 2001. Lord Sainsbury is also the head of the family that formed the major owner of the Sainsbury supermarket chain. He personally owns 13% of the corporation, or £1.3 billion worth of shares, which give him tens of millions of pounds annually in dividends, while his family owns another 35%. His network of supporters also own substantial amounts of shares, such as the CEO of one of his biotech companies, who owns 5%. Lord Sainsbury was the chairman of the Sainsbury Corporation right up until his elevation into Science Minister by Blair in 1998. As Britain's third richest man, Lord Sainsbury has ploughed substantial amounts of the billions yielded to him by the Sainsbury supermarket chain into developing genetic modification technologies. He himself owns two biotech companies, one which owns a patent on a fundamental process used in GM crops. His other firm yielded him an extra £20 million in increased share value from GM research in just 2 years. His has also created the Sainsbury Laboratory for GM Research in Norwich through a combination of his governmental and private funding resources. Thus, he privately funds his laboratory with millions every year from his Gatsby charitable foundation supported by 2 million of Sainsbury shares. At the same time, since becoming Science Minister, he has overseen a massive 300% increase in his government's funding for his laboratory, channelling £1.2 million per year of public money into it. The leading scientists and eminent professors employed by his network of public and private patronage are also amongst the leading impartial scientific advocates of the technology and its alleged harmlessness. Sainsbury's is caught in a contradiction. It wants to reassure consumers made wary and sceptical in the UK after years of food safety scandals that its food is really wholesome and natural. Like other supermarkets, it therefore promotes GM-free as a selling point. It is also enmeshed within a network of corporate investment and political interests that have bought into and are promoting the whole GM project. Thus, it had carried on using milk from GM-fed dairies while consumers rejected it and other retailers have phased it out. Thursday, the 1st of July 2004 was the day it launched its special limited GM-free project range in 105 selected stores. This range will be priced higher than the rest of its milk, but of course farmers will not be passed on this premium. It is aimed at making GM-free a more expensive specialist marketing brand rather than a universal right for all. It hopes that this will ultimately open the door for more GM. On the 1st of July, nationwide blockade of Sainsbury's fulfilment factories happened on an auspicious day for another reason. Earlier on that day, Sainsbury's had warned that its profits for this year would be significantly below expectations. This led to the value of Sainsbury's shares falling by 8.7% and a sudden resignation of the current company chairman, Sir Peter Davis. He was facing a shareholders' rebellion against his 2.4 million bonus while profits and market share were falling. All this was happening in the hours running up to the blockade. The trigger for the chairman's resignation on July the 1st was his 2.4 million pound bonus, which angered powerful institutional investors because it did not reflect the company's poor performance. Of course, they are not worried about the workers. For at the same time, Sainsbury's announced it is axing its Christmas bonus to its 100,000 full-time staff. This is a £2 million plus award, which will do Sir Peter very nicely, while 15% of Sainsbury's staff missed out on a pay rise and the Christmas bonus scheme is being cut, said the Transport and General Workers Union.
Veteran campaigner Jim Thomas writes of 8 years of raw, direct, popular opposition in the UK, which has managed to remove GM ingredients from all human food sold in the UK, remove GM ingredients from pretty much all poultry and pig feed in the UK, reduce the number of UK GM crop field trials from hundreds of locations per year to currently one, cause Monsanto to leave the UK, stopping further breeding work here, reduced the number of GM varieties, seeking government approval from almost 60 varieties, down to a remaining two that have no chance of being legally grown, and acted as a catalyst, inspiring campaigners and activists to challenge GM crops around the world. The UK has seen one of the most sustained campaigns of direct action and popular campaigning in recent history. Year after year, night after night, the GM crops were pulled up by local villagers and environmental activists. All this effort has shown the way to victory. Jim adds, campaigners rarely get satisfaction of so clearly winning, a win for the thousands and thousands of people who spent cold nights pulling up crops, long weekends talking to shoppers and farmers, and years of emotional and intellectual energy countering the bullying, lobbying power and financial clout of gene giants. The battle is still not won. The corporations have invested billions in developing GM crops. Chemical corporations like Monsanto have taken a massive gamble and transformed themselves into GM seed companies. Biotechnology was, along with information technology, supposed to be the herald of a new epoch of capitalism, a solution to its deepening period of crisis. In the 1970s, chemical corporations like the Monsanto saw the promise of an escape from the contradictions of the petrochemical epoch. They dreamed they would leap ahead of the competition with rDNA technology. This would be the generator of wealth in the new knowledge economy. The reproductive capacity of nature would form a new means of production. Life was just a code and could now be reprogrammed to suit corporate needs. New chemicals and pharmaceuticals could be grown in plants rather than manufactured by workers in factories as part of the troubled petrochemical complex. And thus these very plant species, wherever they are reproduced themselves, their seeds would be privatised and patented intellectual property of the corporations. And first they would flood the world with the most simple and crude product of this new knowledge, crops engineered to be resistant to their own brand herbicides. These would be the heralds of the new biotech epoch. Yet the contradictions of GM are proving more difficult to manage. GM technologies bring together such incommensurate timescales. They intervene in millions of years of evolutionary time, in a way as yet dimly understood. At the same time, corporations have never been governed by more than short-term aims of dancing to the ever-increasing rhythm of competition on the world market, where billions of dollars can shift in microseconds. The scientific questions this radically new gene-splicing technology raises will take decades to answer, questions raising from the real role of DNA, the effects of scrambling it, and the long-term consequence for human health and the ecosystem. Yet the massive institutional investors, who were so dazzled by the promise spun to them by the scientists in the 1980s, the dream of a second privatised genesis, have now waited over 20 years for a return on their investment. This is all they can bear. They want a return on their capital soon. The anti-GM resistance has shown its power. It is possible to stop GM crops. The multinational corporation agenda does not represent an inevitable and unstoppable lines of progress. Resistance can stop them and open up the possibility of alternative paths of progress. These are the paths to a more sustainable, equal and just world.
I'm going to be around my vegetables. I'm going to chop down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. If you brought a big brown bag of them home, I'd jump up and down and hope you'd toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables, cart off and sell my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable. Oh, table vegetable. I tried to kick the ball, but my tenny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so
July the 28th, 2004, Privacy International will stage the 6th annual UK Big Brother Awards to recognise the people and organisations that have done the most to devastate privacy and civil liberties in the UK. Now an annual event in 17 countries, Privacy International's Big Brother Awards bring together a rich and unique mix of all ideologies and backgrounds. This year, for the first time, the award night will be open to the general public. A space for 1,000 people has been reserved at the London School of Economics, which is hosting the event on the night. Nominations from the public are now being received for the worst public servant, most invasive company, most appalling project, most heinous government organisation and lifetime menace. Then there's the award for the most unspeakably heinous villain, judge's choice. Mark Thomas, formerly of Channel 4's Mark Thomas comedy product, will be emceeing. Privacy International, a London-based civil rights group, has for the past 14 years raised awareness around the world about privacy threats ranging from military surveillance to workplace drug testing. Since their inception in 1998, Big Brother Awards are now held as an annual event in countries such as Japan, the United States, France, Germany, Austria, Denmark, Belgium, Spain, New Zealand and Australia. The Gold Awards, in the shape of a boot stamping on a human head, drew their inspiration from Georgia Orwell's novel 1984.
No, really?
In keeping with a larger and more open event, there will be a range of entertainment on the night. The hilarious award-winning cabaret act Topping and Butch will be doing a set, along with some special guests. Then it's cheap drinks, lots of chat and dancing for the rest of the night. Simon Davies, director of Privacy International, said, given the depressing state of civil liberties in the UK, throwing a huge party is the very least we can do. The challenges facing civil liberties and privacy in Britain are more extensive than at any point since the Second World War, he said. These fragile rights are under sustained and systematic attack by almost all parts of the public and private sector. Without care, these freedoms will largely disappear. The event has no charge. Anyone wanting to come along for the fun should RSVP as quickly as possible to simon@privacy.org, or you can telephone, get your pens and papers ready, 0207 955 6579. I'll say that again, I feel a bit Blue Peter today. 0207 955 6579.
Alex Isett, who was vaccinated 9 times in 24 hours in preparation for the first Gulf War, recently went on 40-day hunger strike to protest against his treatment over Gulf War syndrome. His protests and years of pressure by veterans have been a catalyst for an independent public inquiry into the causes of Gulf War syndrome. Ben Martin of Payday says, not only are soldiers used as cannon fodder during wars, they are also used as guinea pigs to test drugs, vaccines and even, as with nuclear bombs and depleted uranium, the likely lasting effects of weapons. Those who survive these trials are discarded when they are no longer needed for fighting or become too ill to fight. For more, see www.lloyd-gwii.com.
And staying in roughly the same area, a senior Foreign Office official issued a dramatic warning last week about possible consequences of a British court ruling on the legality of the Iraq War. In a tone best described as one of feverish consternation, Sir Michael Hastings Jay, the permanent Under Secretary of State at the Foreign Office and head of the diplomatic services, warned that any court ruling on the Iraq War, critical of UK government policy, could damage relations with other governments, destabilising the new administration in Iraq, and give aid and comfort to terrorists putting the lives of British citizens in danger. Sir Michael's 4-page signed statement was handed to a hearing of the Court of Appeal at the Royal Courts of Justice last Tuesday, 10 minutes before the hearing was due to start. The hearing was concerning the cases of the Fairford Five, a group of peace protesters charged with conspiracy and criminal damage for their actions at a Gloucestershire airbase during the war on Iraq last year. After a preparatory hearing in Bristol Crown Court in May, Mr. Justice Grigson ruled that the matter of their legality of the Iraq War was non-justiciable. That is, that the Fairford Five were not entitled to argue in their defence that they had acted to resist an unlawful war. Lawyers for the five peace activists argue that for their clients to have a fair trial, it will be necessary for them to speak out about their sincere belief that the war was unlawful.
Monday, June 28th, was an International Day of Action to demand the liberation of the people who are still being held 1 month after they were arrested in Guadalajara during the third gathering of heads of state from the EU, Latin America and the Caribbean. There was a march in Mexico to demand that the people who were arrested in Guadalajara exactly 1 month before be set free. Also planned for that date in Guadalajara were a forum about human rights, constitutional legality and freedom for all political prisoners and a silent march. An action is also planned for that day in Madrid. 33 people have been imprisoned since May 28th. Those who were residents of the state of Jalisco, of which Guadalajara is capital, have to pay 25,000 pesos, that's $2,500. Those individuals not from Jalisco are expected to pay 50,000 pesos. These fees are only the bail that allows them to be released from jail.
Press release. Peace activists on trial claim international privatisation of Iraq is pillage and violates the Geneva Convention. Peace activist Eva Jazovic, 26, recently returned from 9 months solidarity work with trade unionists and refugees and women's groups in Iraq. Following her return, Eva and a fellow activist were charged with aggravated trespass whilst protesting against the Iraqi procurement conference held in London on the 27th of April 2004. The trial will be held at Highbury Corner Magistrates Court on July the 9th at 10:30 a.m. with supporters staging a lively solidarity picket from 9 a.m. The prosecution, Windrush Communications, organised the Iraq Procurement Conference to bring together over 200 companies and organisations from around the world to discuss the wide range of economic opportunities available. The event was open to interested businesses and organisations from all countries immediately following the awarding of up to $18.4 billion in contracts from the US Congress and prior to the handover from the Coalition Provisional Authority to the new Iraqi regime on the 30th of June last week. This quote comes from the event website, which listeners can go to, which is www.iraqprocurement.com. The defendants have been charged with disrupting a lawful meeting when they unravelled barriers and addressed the delegates as collaborators complicit in the daily massacres in Iraq. The defence will argue that the meeting was not a lawful event as it was facilitating acts of pillage illegal under the Hague Regulations of 1907, which Britain and the US are both signatories to. In a leaked memo dated March 26, 2003, UK Attorney General Lord Peter Goldsmith advised Prime Minister Blair that in his view the imposition of major structural economic reforms would not be authorised under international law. Source Guardian, the 7th November 2003. Pillage is forbidden. Why the privatisation of Iraq is illegal. That's the piece by Aaron Matte. The defendants have asked the Attorney General to give evidence at the trial, but it is unknown whether he will attend. Okay, for more information on that, please contact Eva at freelance@mailworks.org.
Thank you. process is one of invisibility.
Science, the multinational agrochemical and biotech corporation, has dropped its court action against Friends of the Earth. It had tried to prevent the environmental group from telling the public how access safety data on pesticides, including a flagship weed killer for use on GM herbicide-tolerant crops in the UK, glufosinate ammonium. Bayer started legal action when Friends of the Earth told them it had legally obtained copies of safety data from the Swedish pesticide regulator KEMI and said it was going to tell the public how they could obtain the information in the same way. The information at the centre of the row is of interest to people exposed to pesticides through work, living near sprayed fields. Legal representatives and academics researching the environment and health impacts of pesticide use. The group told Bayer it intended to use its website to tell people how to get data from regulators around the world, including Sweden, Denmark, Ireland, and the USA. Bayer had previously taken the UK government to court to stop them releasing the same information to FOE. Last October, Bayer applied to the High Court for an injunction to stop Friends of the Earth from telling people that KEMI or any other regulator held Bayer's pesticide data, telling people that Friends of the Earth had obtained copies of Bayer's pesticide data from foreign regulators, and from making any more requests to KEMI or any other foreign regulator for access to Bayer's data. Bayer has now signed up to a settlement promising never to sue Friends of the Earth again for doing these things, and in particular not to sue Friends of the Earth for telling members of the public how to access this type of data or for requesting this type of data from regulators. A webpage published this week by Friends of the Earth gives advice to the public on how to make requests to international regulators to get copies of information submitted by companies as part of approval applications. The webpage includes a warning that the data be subject to copyright protection and intellectual property rights. Ooh. Commenting Tony Juniper, that's a good name for a Friends of the Earth person. Commenting Tony Juniper, director of Friends of the Earth, said this is a humiliating climb down by a biotech bully. Bayer tried to use their massive financial muscle to prevent members of the public having access to important health and environmental data about substances that are sprayed on our food crops every day. Bayer have gone to great lengths and expense to keep their data out of the public domain, but in the end were forced to cave in because our case was right. Friends of the Earth's victory is a major step towards lifting the veil of corporate secrecy that surrounds pesticide approvals. It is an important signal to big business that we will not be silenced. It's high time the corporations making pesticides and chemicals moved into the 21st century and supported full access to information instead of resorting to bully boy tactics in the courts. Bayer market many pesticides worldwide, which pose a threat to the environment and health. Last month, the French government banned Bayer's pesticide Galcho because of the threat it poses to honeybees until the product product undergoes a further EU safety review in 2006. Other Bayer pesticides include Aldicarb, one of the most toxic chemicals still approved. Bayer successfully lobbied to prevent a EU-wide ban last year and continues to keep the product on the market beyond 2007. The Bayer weed killer IPU is frequently detected in rivers during the winter months and has to be filtered out from water going into public at high cost to water companies to comply with EU drinking water limits.
Sometimes I feel like a sociogenetic experiment, a petri dish community's token of infection. I feel like a sociogenetic experiment, a petri dish community's token of infection. You see, I'm African, Native American, Irish and German. I was adopted by parents who loved me. They were the same color as the kids who called me nigger on the walk home from school. I cried until I found out what it meant. Then I got me some equipment, my fist man. I was a hit man with no friends. But who the hell am I cursing those whose skin is half my DNA? Why am I and why shouldn't I be ashamed of this fact? After all the feces they dumped on me and my species. But sometimes I feel like a sociogenetic experiment, a petri dish community's token of infection. I feel like a sociogenetic experiment, a petri dish community's token of infection. Those filthy mothers, shut your mouth. There I go again with those high and mighty speeches, when they are in fact part of my species. Or is it the other way around? Did I piss in their gene pool? If I did, it wouldn't matter. They kept me in the deep end, 'cause the slightest dilution in their solution was perceived as pollution. But sometimes I feel like a sociogenetic experiment, a petri dish community's token of infection. I feel like a sociogenetic experiment, a petri dish community's token of infection. Destiny. I am the human scientific process over and over and over again. The dirt that I shovel to uncover the truth often buries something else growing. Acceptance of my own weakness and my own intolerance is seldom. But that is in fact my identity, uncluttered by the maskings of consumer addiction. Ethnocentricity in the light of miscegenation. This fable of elements which classify order, species, subspecies, genus, phyla, animal, vegetable, illegal, chemical, socialist, democrat, republican, yuppie, buppy, guppy, proud, racist, black, white, African, Native American, Irish and German.
This is Indie Media, Radio London. Don't hate the media, be the media.
On July the 1st, 2004, London Rising Tide dropped in on Mummy, the Inside Story at the British Museum, billed as a BP special exhibition. Protesters unfurled a banner reading, "Oil fuels climate chaos," in the main covered area, suggesting to the visiting throngs that BP is profiting from oil wars and climate change while diverting the public gaze away from these dark truths with a widespread programme of cultural sponsorship. The National Portrait Portrait Gallery, the Royal Opera House and the National Gallery are the most prominent current examples. Having been escorted away by a bevy of burly and sometimes bad-tempered security guards, passing leaflets to interested and even supportive visitors on the way, protesters then took up residency outside the gates. There they asked people to make their opposition to BP sponsorship known to the museum, pointing out that US and UK troops were much more concerned about protecting Iraqi oil reserves than the Baghdad Museum during the early days of the occupation last year. It has to be said that there's a bit of a hill to climb when it comes to pressuring the museum, since BP boss Lord Brown sits on the board of trustees. A police contingent duly arrived, insisting that protesters move away from the closed emergency gates and stop leafleting. Two comedians wrapped themselves up in the banner saying, "Hooray for the oil and chemical companies, and get a job, you middle-class hippies." The CFM campaigners said it was also a shot in the arm to receive so much positive support from all kinds of people. A slightly unusual experience environmentalists have been getting used to up in the Scotted Art Not Oil Gallery at 50 Chalk Farm Road, which is still open from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. daily and well worth a visit. For more information about the campaign, visit www.risingtide.org.uk and www.risingtide.org.uk, also geneticaction.org.uk.
Sunday was the 4th of July, the now regular Independence Day from America protests, with demonstrations being held at several American military bases up and down the country. At the misnamed RAF Lakenheath base, it should of course be United States Air Force Base, around 80 activists gathered for a fancy dress peacemakers' ball to declare independence from the USA and voice their objections to the USA basing combat aircraft, nuclear and other bombs in our country. The base has been used for dropping cluster bombs on Iraq, of course, in the most recent conflicts. There was music, theatre, tea and cake and cucumber sandwiches for the many well-dressed attendees, and the fence was made more colourful with the addition of a variety of banners. Dressed in ball gowns, dinner jackets and others appearing as peace fairies, big corporations and other strange fancy dress outfits, their message was clear, that the UK and many people around the world want freedom from the greedy, aggressive American foreign policies that have been forced upon us. Later, the protest moved to RAF Feltwell, another misnamed United States Air Force base. And here, a large 4th of July party was being held inside the base, with military partygoers being offered information on the secret nuclear weapons base there as they went in. Protesters said the response rate from the military base personnel was pretty low, although they thought that might be something to do that it's pretty hard to hear people inside your large SUVs and pickups, which is favoured by many of the base personnel as they roared into the base past the peace fairies. The party outside the base continued late into the night with music, cabaret and theatre acts. There was music from La Magnifique with top political rapping. The peace pearlies sang traditional songs to new words with great outfits full of pearl buttons. Norwich Stop the War performers were out doing street theatre as well as the brilliant Theatre of War's nuclear fashion show. Lots of colour going on there. There was fiddle, vocal and guitar, folk music, poetry. Indeed, some poetry read so passionately that the police had to ask the reader to calm down. As well as spokespeople from CND speaking about the dangers of the American policies, nuclear weapons and US bases on British soil. And, of course, the Declaration of Independence from America was read out at the base gates.
I wonder what piece of legislation they asked them to calm down under. On the same day, around 150 people gathered at the largest US spy base in the world, located in the heart of rural England at Menwith Hill in North Yorkshire. Mobeen Azad, co-chair of Leeds Stop the War Coalition, John Lampert, Green MEP for London, and John Slobodia, co-founder of Iraq Body Count, spoke to the people, who then walked around the base accompanied by Sheffield Samba Band providing music and the Circa Rebel Clown Army providing much amusement. Merrymaking and a certain amount of de-escalation of tensions. There were around 200 police officers in attendance, along with 17 riot vans. An enormous array of police from local forces, along with their cars, vans, patrol vehicles, video units, 8 horses, officers on cycles, and Ministry of Defence police agency officers. The campaigners have condemned the heavy-handed policing. The police took the names and addresses of drivers as they arrived and filmed all vehicle number plates. Other oppressive measures included surrounding the demonstration with police, pushing people and not letting people leave the demo, which is illegal when they wanted to, and generally using their power over people to make them feel controlled and disempowered. Despite this, and the not exactly brilliant British weather, the demonstration continued with its tour of the perimeter of the spy base, pausing to make speeches. The public reading of the Declaration of Independence from American militarism was very moving, as was the 1 minute silence to remember all those killed, injured, and lastingly damaged by the illegal invasion of Iraq. For more information, see www.caab.org.uk.
The antisocial behaviour orders, or ASBOs, trumpeted by the government to deal with job culture, are now becoming yet another handy stick with which to beat anyone who wants to protest, complain too much, or just dance in a field. Recently, this example has come to light. For the past few years, Dave Edwards has been campaigning in Rugby against the council over issues like health and safety and corruption. Rugby council got so fed up with his protests that they did what every caring council does and tried to shut him up by slapping an interim antisocial behaviour order on him. Dave then decided to camp outside the town hall and go on hunger strike. After a few days, he was arrested under the Vagrancy Act, but magistrates decided it was not in the public interest for the case to continue, so Dave resumed his position on the council steps. Last Thursday, Dave was again arrested and charged with breaching his interim ASBO by causing alarm and distress to an ex-councillor. Since then, he has been held on remand at Blakenhurst Prison in Redditch, where he remains on hunger strike. For more information, see www.thevoiceofthepeople.org.uk.
And we're almost out of time now. Just some upcoming announcements. Tonight at 8 o'clock, there's a free screening of Metropolis and the Globalisation tapes made over 75 years ago. The Fritz Lang's classic anti-capitalist sci-fi presents a vision of a world in which the underclass work like machines in the depths of the city, while the rich bosses live a life of leisure and luxury in their penthouse apartments. The other film, the Globalisation tapes, reveals a world in which the workers of the resource-rich South toil in awful conditions for the benefit of the privileged consumers of the rich industrialised nations of the North. And both films are being shown this evening at the Squatted Rampart Centre. That's Rampart Street, London E1.
Interesting. Metropolis was Goebel's favourite film. Saturday the 10th, Whose Rules Rules? 60 Glorious or Notorious Years, conference organised by the World Development Movement on the 60th anniversary of the IMF and World Bank. WDM looks back at their blotted past and considers their future. That's being held at Friends House, 173 Euston Road, London. Free admission, website www.wdm.org.uk.
Also, on the same day, this Saturday, there's an event called Life After Capitalism. VNet founder and leading radical commentator Michael Albert will be talking about participatory economics, a way of organising work and society that seeks to overcome exploitation and provide people with balanced, fulfilling lives which they control democratically. That's at 5 p.m, room H216, London School of Economics, Houghton Street, London, WC2. For more information, see www.radicalactivist.net.
Yet more for this Saturday. There's also the latest monthly European Creative Forum event, preparing cultural and creative ideas for the European Social Forum, taking place this October in London. Doors open at 1 p.m. and the programme kicks off at 2:30 p.m, going through until the early hours and ending in a party. That's at the Rampart Street Community Creative Centre and Social Space, 1517 Rampart Street, London E1. And for more details, see www.europeancreativeforum.org.
Then coming up on Sunday at 2 o'clock, there's a radio skill sharing workshop, including basic mini disc recording techniques and interview technique guidance, including also they'll be looking at internet streaming technologies and a bit of brainstorming around both community radio and also broadcasting radio on the internet. And that's this Sunday, the 11th of July. As I said, that's at 2 o'clock, and that's being held at the Grand Banks Occupy Social Centre, which is Fortes Road. That's 156 to 158 Fortes Road at Tufnell Park, NW5.
And finally, No Comment, The Defendant's Guide to Arrest has been reprinted, thanks to money from the Metropolitan Police. The Met were recently forced to pay thousands of pounds compensation to people nicked on an anti-royal demo. Some of that compensation has been used to reprint the guide. You can download it at www.idmg.org. .uk.
Except it's not. It's www.ldmg.org.uk.
Oh, no, we'll say it again. www.ldmg.org.uk.
And that's it. We're just about out of time. We're going to play it out with a five-minute track. And just also to say, if you want to get in touch with us, you can contact us at the following email address. That's irlnewswire@ziplip.com. That's irlnewswire@ziplip.com. So we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down.
We're like the bullies of the world right now, you know that?
And the voice of the harpers shall be heard no more at all in thee.
Throwing the pistol at the sheepherder's feet.
And the light of the candle shall shine no more at all in thee.
Pick it up.
This is CBS.
This is PBS.
This is ABC.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Good evening. The United States of America is at war.
Pick up the gun.
To begin with, the army occupying Kuwait would hardly be touched. Instead, targets all over Iraq would be obliterated.
Imagine Iraq
like a human body. What happens if you sever their spinal cord? They can't function, right?
Tomahawk cruise missile, F-14 Tomcat, devastating JP-233 bombs, target of the most intense aerial bombardment the world has ever known. American B-52s flying high above the reach of Iraqi fire.
Casualties on the Iraqi side will be extremely high.
Saddam Hussein must be seen to be the loser.
This was tremendous. Baghdad was lit up like a Christmas tree.
1,300 sorties so far.
The first airstrikes were probing, testing the efficiency of Baghdad's defences. On Friday, the tactics changed to heavy saturation bombing.
First 24 hours consisted of more attacks than the entire number of targets in the years 1942 and 1943 during the combined bomber offensive in Europe.
6 minutes after the stealth bombers left, the cruise missiles arrived. Others dropped carbon filament to short the electrical grid system.
American, British and Saudi bombers and fighters from air bases and carriers joined in a single concerted attack.
There's another wave of bombing just starting. This is the first time anybody's seen a war like this.
Britain still hasn't formally declared war on Iraq. Apparently the Foreign Office nowadays considers it a bit old-fashioned.
Mr. Ambassador, you have virtually the entire world community ranged against you.
It is an American game.
At this point, I'm not looking through my goggles. I'm looking at the TV screen. I gave the word GISM.
Mr. Ambassador, we bid you good morning.
GISM.
AWACS plane was packed with computer equipment helped to control the battle.
I swept my gun.
Iraqi soldiers ran through the crosshairs.
Vietnam is a ghost of
terror. Gradually, they are being starved, quite apart from the aerial bombardment.
Daybreak saw no letup. New targets were sought out. Some of those not destroyed overnight returned to.
Allied aircraft have now flown a total of 4,000 sorties.
Many people are dying at the moment, Mr. Ambassador.
67 hit records have been banned by the BBC for reasons of sensitivity. Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight, Boom Bang a Bang by Lulu, and Cat Stevens, I'm Gonna Get Me a Gun. Yet the record most requested by our boys in the Gulf is Barry Maguire's The Needle of Destruction.
What we cannot be proud of, Mr. Speaker, is the unshaven, shaggy-haired, drunk culture, poor excuses for Americans wearing their tiny, round, wire-rimmed glasses, a protester's symbol of the Blame America First crowd, out in front of the White House, burning the American flag.
But the main development in the war is tonight's Scud missile attack on Israel.
Saddam Hussein has now twice sent extremely dangerous weapons into the middle of a built-up area.
Most intense air attack since the Second World War.
Has now twice.
The system dispenses hundreds of tiny bomblets.
Has now twice.
Allied planes have
been over 8,000 exhausted.
Has now twice.
The attacks on Baghdad, Tikrit, Samawa, Nasiriyah and Basra.
The electricity gone off everywhere in the whole city. There's no water, no telephone, no communication for anybody.
Military briefings have emphasized the threat still posed by Iraq's Scud missiles.
2,000 sorties a day.
Scud targets, Scud launchers,
Scud launching sites, Scud missile attacks.
Scud missiles,
Scud rockets,
Scud sites,
Scud
Scud sites,
Scud rockets.
No one has yet been killed in these Scud missile attacks. They're extremely inaccurate.
Search for Scuds.
Three Scud missile launchers.
Scud targets.
Scud missiles.
They've now flown 10,000 sorties.
This person here described the impact of the Scud as feeble, extremely frightening.
12,000 Allied sorties.
President Saddam Hussein, Scud rockets.
Exert a powerful grip on the public imagination.
We acknowledge Scuds are a weapon of terror.
Saying that Scuds are a danger to your nation is like saying that...